You're listening to Go Fish with Mike Buck on AM 690, The Fishing Answer. This segment is being brought to you by the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council at wpcouncil.org.
Oh, yeah.
Now, troll on in.
Troll on in and prepare to get some, at least get some good information. We got a couple of things going on today. First of all, we want to say on behalf of everybody at the council, Happy New Year, and specifically to Josh Jamello, fishery analyst, who joins us today to talk story about what's happening in 2016. And first of all, Happy New Year.
Haole makahiki ho.
Same to you, my brother. And also let's celebrate the fact that we had a lot of fish. You know, I mean, the fish was really good. It was plentiful. Everybody that needed to buy fish over the holiday did. But there's a lot of misunderstanding about that. And even though that's not the main subject of today, could you explain a little bit for people that don't know how this quota system works and how we were able to, in Hawaii, hit our quota and yet still go out and get big eye?
So the big eye tuna is a highly migratory species, meaning it can be found all over the world. It's not a one stock for Hawaii like we talked about with the yellowfin. So this stock is managed throughout the Pacific, and there's fishermen from not only Hawaii, but China, Japan, Indonesia, Micronesia, even as far away as Spain and the European Union, all fish on it. So it's managed internationally by an international organization that the U.S. is a party to through the Department of State. And they do the stock assessments of what they think the status of the stock is, how many fish there are, and relative to how many people there are fishing.
That's subjective, isn't it? I mean, there's a lot of people that agree on the way the stock assessment is done, a lot of people that don't. But it is consistently getting refined to the fact that you can sort of rely a little bit more on some of the information today.
And it's basically how good your data is.
Yeah, of course.
Where your data is coming from and if everyone's giving you the right data. So,
and they're being honest.
Right. Yeah. From that stock assessment, they're able to pull out how much each country can take or how much each fishery can take. And from there, all we do is start portioning it out to all the different areas. So Hawaii has a catch limit. And so does all of the other U.S. Pacific Islands. And it's assumed that all of that fish would be caught. And if all that fish was caught, we'd still be at the same level of
We've talked about this before, status. Folks. This is sustainability. So the numbers that Josh is talking about, theoretically, would allow you to take so many tons out of an area every year and have a residual replenishment so that you could do it again the next year.
Right. So that's basically what the stock assessment says. So if there's a quota for us, one for America, Samoa, Tahiti, France, China, Indonesia, it assumes that all of that's going to be caught and we'll still be able to keep fishing in the future.
Okay. Well, let's take a look at what happened this year as an example. The agreed upon quota in the areas that our longline fleet was fishing was met. And that would have theoretically said, that's it. You guys can't catch any more fish. But yet there were a couple of 12th hour or 11th hour passes that we got where our guys could go somewhere else and catch fish, but certainly not without consequences. They didn't just go over there and catch some fish. It cost to catch somebody else's quota.
Yes, they had to negotiate with the government. The fishing industry, the Hawaii Longline Association, had to physically negotiate with the government on what that price for that quota would be.
Okay, so when our fishery got shut off, when we say that, define where that was and what we did, what was plan B? Where did we go catch the fish?
So we still caught the fish in the same areas because it doesn't matter if you catch it in Samoa or Guam or Hawaii, it's all the same stock. So they still fished in the same areas. But the catch was attributed to the quota for those other areas.
In other words, if I'm fishing out of the Hawaii Longline fleet, I bring home what's called the landed catch.
Right.
And after it reaches so many tons or whatever, I'm done. However, if Guam hasn't used theirs or somebody else hasn't used theirs, now these boats can negotiate a way to catch more fish.
Right. So in August, the Hawaii Longline fleet met its quota and the fishery was closed based on that quota, but reopened again because the Hawaii Longline Association negotiated with the government of the Commonwealth of the Northern Mariana Islands for a part of their quota. And all of this is legal under the fishery management rules that were put in place. So they caught that quota, which was, I think, 2,000.
2,000 more metric tons.
Right. Yeah. And then they would have been shut down again in early December, late November.
So that's what I said. At the 11th hour, here came another opportunity, another option.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so they negotiated with Guam so that there was fish for New Year's and Christmas.
But we cannot assume that that's always going to happen.
Right.
In other words, as demand increases globally and the resource is more challenged, it is more likely down the road to have even further restrictions because you can only sustain what you can sustain, right?
Right. As long as the stock assessment says that we can catch that much, it shouldn't be too much of a problem because at the same time, we got to remember that the money that the governments get, they put back into their fisheries.
Sure.
To hopefully that they can fish more in the future and fish their own quota.
You know, you're always doing this as an analyst. You're looking at this. Doesn't this take an awful lot of trust between all of these different countries and governments and fishermen to pull off? I mean, there's a lot of people saying, hey, you know what? We're behaving. We're doing the rules, but the other guys aren't.
Well, I think that's a lot of the fishermen have been telling us that we play by the rules, and the U.S. is constantly being the good big brother, trying to show the world the way on how to manage fisheries. Mm. Yet we still get the short end of the stick.
Hopefully we can get some of that squared away. Now, one of the reasons that we're here at this time of the year, and I'm really stoked, is I have a packet to go through with Josh. There are opportunities always in this fishery to really, really, really be a part of it. And I'm talking about when Josh talks about stocks, assessments, and values, there are some grants and there are some things that are available to you. And it may look ominous. You may have tried this before. And if you are a regular fan or if you know about the council and what the council does, hopefully today you can learn a little bit about more some of these opportunities that might be available. And first of all, Josh, I know that you're the person in the council that wants to see applicants, that wants to see these opportunities pursued. You're not trying to say, okay, I hope we don't get anybody for that position this month. In actual fact, there's a ton of stuff going on. Let's start at the top.
So there's lots of money floating around out there every year for fisheries-related projects, for data projects, for improving your fisheries, developing your fisheries. And a lot of that money doesn't go to Hawaii because no one applies for it. So we'd like to have more of the local agencies, organizations, academic institutions, community groups apply for this money so that the money doesn't all go to the East Coast.
It mainly is, it promotes from within a reason to get into this fishery and to find a career in this fishery. Because I think that what happens is, it's like some people can understand, you know, if they're at work and they get sick leave or vacation leave, they call it, you know, use it or lose it, right?
Right.
And isn't this the case? If you got a nice big fat grant somewhere that if it still shows up as available, somebody back east is going to say, hey, look at this thing. I'll go get this thing.
Or if they don't apply for it and the money's still there, the money goes back into the treasury.
Where do people find out? And I do know now that we're talking about mainly groups and organizations. I know there are a lot of Hawaiian organizations that are entitled to participate in some of these grants. Where it's like looking for a needle in a haystack for some. Let's walk people through how they can find out what's out there.
The best site to go to for federal grants is grants.gov on the web. And you can search for by agency or by title or by subject or keyword. And grants.gov will list out all the available federal grants. But you can also go to your congressional representatives' websites.
They're really sharp on some of it.
Right.
And, you know, we mentioned the story earlier about the longline boats and everything. Dan Inouye was famous for being able to not only, he was called the King of Pork, right?
Right.
Bringing us a lot. But he also presented a lot of opportunities. And I'm glad to see that some of our newer senators, Senator Schatz has done it. And I do know that Senator Hirono has done it. These people find out what's available for us and they put it on their sites too.
Right. So that's a good place. Some of the other places like the National Marine Fisheries Service web pages have for their grants, Fish and Wildlife Service, even some of the universities will have some grant opportunities.
But, you know, the thing that I'm worried about is a lot of people think that they're competing against a stacked deck. You talked about this before. There are people that work for organizations, including the council, that are grant writers, that they look for opportunities to get funding for things. In other words, that's where a lot of funding for research and development comes from.
Right. And the community aspect is what a lot of these different agencies are missing,
mm-hmm.
those community partners. And while you have institutions like the University of Hawaii or Scripps University in California that are writing these big grants and they're really nicely written, but they're missing that community component that a lot of these guys are looking for.
Yeah, that's really kind of what's interesting. When you're a little, when you think you're a little peanut, you may be, but you may be the plum in somebody's pie, that somebody's looking for a group like yours to get this grant.
Right. And if you can collaborate with a big group, like University of Hawaii or Scripps or HPU, that makes it even stronger.
How does it work? I mean, you know, when let's say that I go to grants.gov and I find something interesting and I go click it, it's there's like a myriad of stuff that's got, it's daunting to say the least.
There's a ton of work, and for some of the grants, the money doesn't seem worth it to actually go through the whole process, but if you think about it, you can use that as seed money for your community to do a project that keeps your group together and moves it forward along through the
years. Talk about some specifics in that, Josh. Maybe like you can mention, let's talk a little bit about Limu. You know, there's been grants available. There's been groups that have, you know, salt of the earth groups that have been able to take advantage of this and get compensated for work they're doing. How does it trickle down into the actual group?
So when you apply for a grant, you need to have a DUNS number.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the identifiers that the federal government uses to know who you are.
In other words, there's criteria. Somebody that can take a grant, I can't just say, "Gee, I'm a nice guy. I want to go count two, and I'll get a grant." I need to have direction, purpose, and to be recognized.
So that DUNS number is an identifier to by the fiscal group and.
Yeah. Think of it as a UPC government number on a product.
Basically.
You got that number, right?
Right. So if you get that number, you can go and apply for all these different grants. Mm-hmm. And when you go through the grant process, there's a project narrative and methods and outreach and what you're going to do with what happens from the project and how it relates to the priorities of the program. So all of that has to be written up. And that I think, is the hardest for a small group or a small community that's just starting out, that doesn't have the experience, but really has the drive and energy to do a project.
Who actually facilitates the assistance part? I know that when people come to the council and they say, I want to do this or we want to do that, where can they get help to do this? Because it is, I mean, look, having computer skills is one thing, but having to wade through this stuff, it's like quicksand. You know, it really slows somebody down.
Right. There are a lot of different grant opportunity or grant writing workshops you can attend. If the deadline's coming up and you really need some help, the staff at the council can help.
We have some deadlines that are coming up right now. What are they?
So the first one is the Marine Education and Training Grant.
Mm-hmm.
That one is for $15,000 to do a project that increases the knowledge or education awareness of marine science resources, education, training, seafood opportunities. There's a bunch of different projects. This project has been going on for the past maybe 10 years now.
You know, there have been a lot of groups that really wanted to be participants and contributory in different areas. To know that this money is available, I mentioned the Limu group before, but isn't now, we're just starting to realize, not just at the council, but everywhere, that home rule is important, that the getting participation of a fishery in a certain bay is important. Are some of these things available for that kind of study?
I think this grant in particular, the Marine Education and Training Grant, is probably the best one for the for those kind of projects, because it's small enough to do. It's not a lot of money to keep track of, and you can get something done and it produce a result that you can use to build upon and build your community.
You mentioned the DUNS number before, and I know that's daunting. There are criteria for that too, right? What are some of them?
For this grant, you just have to be either an institution, an organization, or even a single person.
Yeah, I do know
you
that
you don't have to be a nonprofit.
I was going
to
say it's not mandatory that you're nonprofit. I know that that tilts the scale in the approval process sometimes, but that if somebody is presentable to a specific project and can identify what their value is, that the granting of the grant is not contingent upon them being nonprofit.
Right, and I think the nonprofit thing helps for tax purposes, mm-hmm. Down the line, because you got $15,000.
Right, you don't want it to be straight income in your pocket.
Right. So, I guess you'd have to talk to a tax attorney, not me, but on how that works. But that nonprofit helps.
How does some of the? And I know that we spent a lot of time last year, and we will this year, going forward on some of these specific grants, like the one we're talking about now. But doesn't that also enable you guys to do a better job, because if you got people out there that are getting a grant to get something and the information is that they provide is valuable to you, everybody wins.
I would encourage that, and I would encourage them to look at what the council's priorities are, research priorities are, and try and find a way to make sure that your methods are scientifically sound so that it can be used in management decisions in the future.
Do the person that is going to administer or grant the grant, they're sharp enough to be able to go through and take my application and determine whether or not I have the probable ability or the credentials necessary to do something?
The review of this grant, the Marine Education and Training Grant, actually goes through two reviews. It goes through a review for completeness, and then it goes through a sort of a peer review kind of process where they're sent out to experts in the field, and those experts will review it for content, make sure it meets the priorities and has all the bells and whistles, and then they'll give it a score, and then they'll take it to another panel, review panel, that'll look at the scores and make sure that everyone is
So they get a pretty good comparison, be able to make some. The thing, though, that I think is every now and again, we got to plant the seed of urgency. That some of these things have a time to them, and when they go, they go.
Right.
And this is one of them.
Right.
Yeah. So
this one is due February 3rd.
Okay.
And if your listeners want to apply, I would suggest that they go out and get a DUNS number now, because it takes maybe a week or so to get that DUNS number. But that you can still be working on the rest of your forms while you're waiting for your DUNS number.
Who does the DUNS number? Who gives you that?
I think it's called DUNS in Bradford.
Yeah, it's DUNS. And it's sort of interesting, because I think that sometimes I don't want to say that you set yourself up to fail, but sometimes it takes a couple of go arounds at going through this process to find out what works and what doesn't work.
Right. And there's other forms that you have to fill out. Sometimes you miss a form and it's incomplete, so they can't accept it. So it's always better to get it done early and check with someone to make sure you got all your forms in.
Somebody likened this once to when you go to the Department of Motor Vehicles to re-register an automobile, and you stand in line for 3 hours, and you get there and you find out you don't have that one little yellow paper.
Right, and you don't have your safety check done.
And you're done, excuse the expression. So get the DUNS number. Is there cost involved in that?
No, it should be free.
Yeah. Okay, now, I think that using this particular opportunity as an example, there are some people, like I said before, that are specifically in the world of grant writing. That's what they do. And I do know that, for instance, the Cancer Research Center at University of Hawaii, they have a whole staff of people who do that. And yet, I may be a little schnook, and I'm trying to get into some of that. Is that not, that is not the case in this grant, is it, as far as the type of competition there might be for it?
You do have some high-powered grant writers from nonprofits that do put in proposals. But it's really, because of the reviewers and the experts that actually review it, they're really looking at the content of the grant and seeing if the project is worthwhile for the community and it will benefit education and training of Marine.
There's some organizations, Josh, and once again, we're talking to Josh DeMello. He's a fishery analyst with the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council. And at the beginning of each year, like now, we're trying to let you know that there are super opportunities available in the form of government grants and private sector grants for work to get done that is of value to the fishery and of value to the planet. Grants.gov is where you go and take a look at this. Grants.gov. I still think, though, that people don't get it. Like, there are some groups that get together whether it's the Fish Pond organization or the Protect the Bay organization, they have a way of Googling and clicking and quacking on how to find out these things. You think that grants.gov is a good start?
It's a good start because these are federal grants, and they have their set methods and reviews, and so you can practice on those. And the Marine Education Training Grant is $15,000, so they're not expecting a super long proposal. I think it's 10 pages is the maximum.
Mm-hmm.
And
typically, who might get that grant this year, do you think?
In the past, it has been a lot of the because it's a competition throughout the Western Pacific region. A lot of it is nonprofit organizations, community groups.
Mm-hmm.
There's been some to the university, some to Sea Grant, organizations like KUA that help the Hawaiian community.
Mm-hmm. Give us an example of how that somebody would be qualified to receive the grant, and then what the restrictions would be. In other words, when you get this grant, they don't just give you a check and say, thanks, you made it. They have an expectation of you to do this thing.
Right. So with the grant, you're actually going to get award conditions on what you can spend it on, what you can't spend it on. So for example, with federal funds, you're not supposed to be spending money on food or alcohol.
Right, yeah. I was going to say, the trips to the baseball game and stuff, that they don't count.
Right.
And dinner.
No going out to the bar with your friends.
No P cards, right.
Right. There's also agreements that you make to file progress reports.
Mm-hmm.
They should be every 6 months. You're going to, until the project is done, you're going to file a progress report and a financial report on what you spent your money on.
I can tell you from groups that we've done before that there have been some that get such glowing reports from the other end that they can turn around to either renew or reapply or get a different grant based on that success. Once you get one of these under your belt, doesn't it make it a little bit more palatable and easier to take a look at how to get other stuff?
It does, especially if you're building upon that project with another project.
Mm-hmm.
That came from that original project. You can always go back and show the success of that project that was funded by that same person.
Are most of them annual, or some are for a longer period of time?
Some are two year grants. Some might go 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, like this one that you're talking about though. This $15,000 grant is $15,000 for what period of time?
This is for a 1 year grant.
Yeah. And there are a lot of people I know that get into something, and you know, we're all time poor, right? We get ourselves painted into a corner. They have a reasonable expectation or a requirement that you give them progress reports?
Yes, and they provide regular progress reports, and a lot of it has to be submitted online.
Yeah.
So if you don't have a computer, you might want to write one into your budget.
You might want to get one in your budget.
Or you might want to put a little money in there to hire an intern to help you out on that?
You know, Josh, you've had the opportunity over the past to work with people that have received these grants. I know how passionate you are personally about it. I still want people to feel like they're not jumping into the deep end. You can go in, you can go along to grants.gov, you can just scan a few things, you can go look, there's no obligation, just go kick some tires and see what's out there.
Yeah, and if you have any questions, contact whoever the contact person is and see if you have an idea, float it to them and see if they'd be willing to fund that kind of project.
This one for right now that we're talking about, continuing education, and I mean
Marine education.
It has a window of opportunity that closes pretty quickly. Is there enough time for somebody to get into it from, you know, ground zero right now?
Yes, there is. It shouldn't take too long, especially if you have idea and you got your DUNS number. You could do it in a couple of days. If you don't know how, it might take a little bit longer to write the proposal.
What I think people have to understand is the people that provide these grants want them to be applied to. They want them to be used because their success depends on them granting these grants so people can get the job done.
Right, and then they can get more money to have even more money to give out if they can show those successes year after year.
Yeah, so I mean, it really is like use it or lose it, like we said. So the process takes maybe, if somebody really got into this right now, within a week or two after getting their DUNS number, they get their DUNS number right away, they can find out how the process goes. Once you file, when there's a deadline, how soon do they announce the awardees?
Once the deadline has passed, it should be about a month before you find out whether or not you've made it to the next stage, whether everything's complete and you've made it to the review stage. Then it'll probably take another month or two after that.
Okay, what if somebody says right now, hey, you know what, I just heard about this. I got so much on my plate right now, I can't do it. What other things do you think that are coming up specifically that somebody might get a grant that would be then helpful to the council in your mission?
I think if you can go out and look at your resources, maybe do a dive survey of what's out there.
Mm-hmm.
Just go out, jump in the water outside of your bay or your fishing spot, and what does the habitat look like? How many fish are there? What kind of fish are there? To get that baseline information, that's a lot of times we don't have that information just to see.
And I think that when you really have to understand this is, you know, we talk about the council all the time being a bottoms-up organization. And most of us that are at the bottom feel like, well, at least there's somebody up on top that can get this and appreciate it. I don't know if people realize just how valuable their time and Manao is to what you guys are trying to do.
People don't realize how valuable they are in the process.
Yeah.
They can think that the council will do everything for them, but it's even more important for people above us to hear them as well, because when they're speaking, they are the ones that are the actual constituents that they're responsible to.
You know, what's going to come up pretty soon in March, I think, is the 167th or whatever meeting. I forget which one it is. But I do know there's going to be a lot of activities based around them. And I'm hoping that by that time we'll be able to celebrate on this show somebody that got a grant based on hearing what we were doing, applying for it, and getting it. Because I'm kind of thinking that the information that is gathered by these surveys and things you talk about, if they don't get done, or if they don't get done completely, I guess what I'm getting at is, do you think that people will do it more responsibly and more properly if they're getting paid for it?
I think there's more of an incentive for people to keep doing it, or at least have a leader in the community. A lot of times you have these communities that come together because they have great ideas, they want to do stuff, but everybody has to pay their bills, they have to pay their mortgages, buy food for their kids, but they don't have the time to work on that. This way, you can at least pay one person for part-time to work on it so that they don't have to spend their whole time behind a desk.
But look at how valuable the information they can, by jumping in the water every week for a few months and doing this grant and then filling in the reports and coming up with the information. How important is it for those that get the grant to know that when they've done their work, it's appreciated and passed on to where it can do some good?
I think what comes out of there, whether it's a report or a nice glossy calendar or something else that can be shared amongst the community, that's one of the things that really shows the power of the community. Yeah. And it if it can be taken up by a management, by the state, by the feds, by the council, that's something that's even more powerful for the community to show up.
Okay, so if you get halfway through one of these and you need some help, you know what to do. Call Josh 24 hours a day.
Yeah,
actually,
no problem.
What you're going to do is you're going to go to check grants.gov and also go to wpcouncil.org, whatever you want, and find out some of the other things that are going on. Josh, that's great. I hope people, like I say, I hope this year we hit a home run. We get a couple of people getting these grants from us.
Right, I hope so.
Okay, we'll be back next week. In the meantime, if you want to hear something on the program, you know what to do. Drop me a line, themikebuckshow@aol.com. themikebuckshow@aol.com. So, once again, for everybody at the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council, I'm Mike Buck. Happy New Year. We'll see you next time.